listening to the Rainmaking Podcast. Hosted by high-stakes headhunter, author, and professional speaker, Scott Love.
Welcome, everyone. This is Scott Love. I'm the host of the Rainmaking Podcast, and I hope that you're getting content that helps you to reach your goals. Remember, in client development, you want to get more business, better business, and eventually all the business from your clients. If you're not someone that works in legal, if you work in other industries, let's just say you're in professional services, know that when I bring a guest on here that does consult and advise to the legal industry, those concepts are malleable. They will apply to you. So when I bring people in here that work in a certain niche, just understand that those concepts, those ideas can apply directly to what you do. The target market for this particular podcast are those that are in a client development role in professional services and B2B sales where you're selling to a sophisticated market. Our guest today is Anna Rappaport. I've interviewed Anna on other podcasts that I've had. I've met her in person. I've seen her speak, and she's magnificent. She's got a great way about herself, and I hope that you get a lot of content that can help you. Anna is a former lawyer who has been coaching for over 20 years. She helps lawyers overcome both the external and internal obstacles to business development. As a person who used to hate sales herself, Anna understands where many lawyers are coming from and has numerous tools to help them move forward and develop the tools that they need to reach their potential. Anna is the co-chair of the American Bar Association's Lawyer Leadership and Management Committee, on the Leadership Council of the ABA Dispute Resolution Section, and is on the faculty of the Leadership Council on Legal Diversity. Anna publishes in Law Practice Today and the National Law Review and speaks around the country on various career and business development topics. Anna also has extensive international experience, having worked in Japan, Thailand, and most recently, Turkey. On the personal front, Anna has a loving husband, two wonderful stepsons, and a dog, Ginger. She is also a snowboarder and loves tango and swing dancing. I hope that you get some great ideas from our show today. I've got with me on the show today a good friend, Anna Rappaport. Anna, thanks for joining me on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. And we've known each other for a while. And for those of you that don't know, I've known Anna through the legal industry. As a lot of you all know, I recruit partners for law firms, and she consults to attorneys in the area of professional development as a coach and working with law firms and individuals in that area. So she possesses unique expertise that's malleable across industries and can help anybody listening. If you're involved in B2B sales, or if you're a rainmaker, if you're involved in having to sell services to high-level prospects, she has some ideas that will help you. And today, we're talking about why a niche practice is still your best bet, even in tumultuous times. And Anna, kind of tell us who you are. Tell us about your journey. What did you start early on in your career professionally, and how did you end up to the work that you're doing today?
Well, like many people who go to law school, I went to law school with a little bit deluded about what a legal practice would be like.
Right, right.
And so I ended up deciding pretty quickly that it wasn't for me. So I've been coaching for over 20 years, and I actually started coaching through a leadership development program. And it was just something I was doing on the side. It wasn't my job. But I just really loved doing it. And I was actually quite young when I did this. Mm-hmm. And the first time I was coaching five people who were all 20 years older than me.
Wow, that's
just
fun.
Coincidentally, that's how it worked. And so it was really intimidating because, right. You know, they're looking at me like some young kid. But in the course of doing that and figuring out how to be effective with people, even people who were a little skeptical, it ended up just being extraordinarily rewarding because I learned how to support people in breaking through challenges, breaking right. through situations that they, you know, where they were stuck. And helping people get unstuck is one of the most satisfying things, mm-hmm. as you know, in your practice. I mean, we have different angles on it, but it's still helping people maybe transition in a way that they didn't think was possible. So in the course of doing that, I recognized that the coaching was something I absolutely loved. And so I did that on the side for about 7 years. And then mm-hmm. after working at a consulting firm and working in a law firm and then, you know, just trying various things, I ended up deciding that the coaching was what I wanted to pursue.
That's great.
And then I was starting from scratch, you know, so it's very much the way a lot of lawyers and other professionals are when they decide to go out on their own. They already have a skill set. They have things that they already know they're good at, but then how do you translate that into actually running a business and actually going out and getting clients? Right. So I was in that boat myself and learned to navigate it. And then now I started, you know, attracting clients who had the same issue.
Well, it's nice that you're established. You've got a reputation. People know you. I've heard good things about you. And so it's nice that you've worked hard to kind of build that reputation.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, everyone has something different to offer. And I work really well with people who maybe have some reticence about business development. Mm-hmm. Like when I first started, I was really uncomfortable with selling myself. And I think a lot of people find themselves in that position. And Right. yet we have to get over it. And it can be reassuring to be talking with someone who's been through that journey themselves and, you know, can really relate.
Well, our topic today for everybody listening is why a niche practice is still your best bet, even in tumultuous times. And Anna, tell me about this then, kind of taking what you've learned. You've built a practice within a very specific niche. It's doing well for you, even with COVID, as we've talked about. We've all had to make changes and adjustments. But generally, why do you think it's important to focus on a particular niche? Wouldn't it be better to try to get as much as you can everywhere, as much as you can? What are some of the key advantages that you've learned in your years?
Well, first of all, clients want expertise. So if you are the person who deals with a particular area, right? In the legal field, you know, sometimes it gets very specific. You are the lawyer who deals with nuclear regulatory issues in your particular type of nuclear regulatory issues, right? It can get very, very specific, just because the expertise that's needed is so in depth. But even if you're not talking about something where the technical expertise is that important, it's still valuable because you may be really well known in a particular community. So say you are, there are a million divorce lawyers, right? There are a million divorce lawyers out there. How are you going to make yourself stand out from the crowd? Well, one area would be focusing on a particular kind of client. So maybe there are a lot of people who have maybe kids with special needs. And so if you're getting divorced and you have kids with special needs, I mean, it's not that it's so in depth in terms of the technical details, but it is a particular kind of expertise in the sense that there are some different issues. There's also the factor of having clients be comfortable with you, that right. they know that you're not going to be judgmental or that you're going to have some sensitivity around the kinds of issues that they might be dealing with.
And one thing kind of going along that line, I had an idea I wanted to bounce off you. I've noticed that, let's say there's a lot of people that do what you do, you could even have your style of practice and even your philosophy as kind of a niche. So for example, I recruit partners for law firms. I move them from firm A to firm B. There's a lot of people that do that. What I tell my clients is that I recruit partners, just firm to firm moves. But one thing that's different about me is strategy. So our niche is those that have successful portable practices. So what do you think about having everybody else has that niche, but then you kind of have a sub niche within a certain area? What do you think about that concept?
Oh, I think that's extraordinarily important. I mean, you touched on a couple things that are important. You kind of mentioned, you know, having particular style, mm-hmm. right? And that being a part of your niche. And I think that's true, that can be. I personally, when I work with clients, I make a distinction between, you know, a niche and a unique selling point. Right. So when you're talking about what, you know, who you focus on, you know, your niche is like your clients and the cases, like who exactly you're going after. Mm-hmm. Whereas the unique selling points is what makes you different from the other people. And obviously there's overlap between those two things, right? You, one is going to influence the other, but to some extent, at least I think it can be valuable to parse it out. Because sometimes you are in, you know, going after the exact same clients as, you know, the person down the block, but mm-hmm. their style, their strengths might be that they have a really gentle demeanor that makes people feel really comfortable.
Right.
And, you know, the other person's strengths may be that they're super direct and concise and they respond to your emails within 10 minutes, right? Like people have different selling points and that's fine because different clients are going to want different qualities and value different qualities.
Well, let me ask you this then. In terms of the narrowness of a niche, what advice do you normally give to clients about how narrow they should focus their practices? Are you talking about geographic, about subspecialties? Is it possible to get too granular and too niche? What do you think about that?
I think I've only come across someone getting too granular maybe once or twice. Mm-hmm. And the issue there was that there just simply were not enough people who were willing to pay for that mm-hmm. specific issue. It's usually people end up erring on the side of being too broad. And so what I tell people is you want it to be narrow enough for you to win. And by win, I mean you become the go-to person for that thing, whatever it might be. And so if you can be the go-to person and you can make a good living, right, that's your perfect niche.
That's great. I love that. Narrow enough to win.
Yeah. I mean, now, how many people are actually going to become the go-to person that everybody knows about, that they send you to, that, you know, that all the referral sources, you know, send your way? Like, I mean, not everyone's going to actually achieve that,
right,
but that's fine, right? Like, you really want to just move in that direction. And even if you're not maybe nationally known, you may very well become known within your community, you know, which is one of the reasons that having a niche is so helpful, right? Is because it basically chooses for you how you should be promoting yourself, who you should be making contact with, right? If you're showing up continuously in the same networking circles, you know, if you're known as someone who's, you know, active in women's groups in XYZ area or in mm-hmm. certain ethnic groups, or, I mean, you can frame it a lot of different ways. It's not 100% just focused on expertise, although that's obviously an important piece. Mm-hmm. But just if you're seen continuously in, you know, maybe you speak on a topic and then you write on the topic and then you have a leadership role, right, all within the same community, then people are going to get to know you. They see you again and again, and you become known for that thing. So, you know, it's not like you need to be nationally known in order to have an effective niche.
So,
enough people to kind of know about you that people end up sending, you know, potential clients your direction.
So let me ask you this. Let's just say if somebody is thinking of their top 10 competitors that they deal with all the time, people that they lose business to, people they take business away from. And let's say out of those 10 people that have done these things that you're talking about, they're known within a niche, they're known within a subspecialty, a certain sort of niche affinity group, whatever that is. How many of them do you think deliberately said, I'm going to make this happen, I'm going to do these articles, I'm going to speak at conferences? Do you think there's any of them where this just happened organically, where that's just how they normally think? It just kind of developed that way? Or do you think most of them said, that is my objective and I'm going to go forth and take the action steps to put me in that category? What do you think?
I mean, I think some people are naturally just a lot more strategic than others.
Right.
Right. And frankly, some people are just lazier than others. And lazy can be a really good motivator for strategy.
Right.
Right.
That's great.
I think it was like Henry Ford, right, who said, you know, if I want something difficult done, I'll give it to a lazy person. I may have that a little off, but so, I mean, I think it comes naturally to some people for various reasons. Other people just fall into it. They, you know, ended up in a field or ended up in a job that gave them some very specialized piece of knowledge. And then they decided to use that, or it was sort of a natural progression of what they were doing. So, I mean, I think there's always going to be the people who luck into something.
Right.
And most of us are not going to be in that category, and we have to proactively make something happen.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, if you're just naturally lucky and, you know, go for it, maybe that'll work for you. But for most people, it actually takes some work to think how best to pursue, you know, a niche. So, for example, I find that a lot of people, at least in the legal field, I'm not sure, you know, what other specialties, you know, the people who listen to this podcast have, but at least in the legal field, it's really common for people to have of several things that they do. Right. And so, I mean, so certainly you can have sort of a generalist attorney and maybe they do, you know, a number of different things. But even when you're talking about someone who's in a more focused practice, like, you know, maybe they do construction, construction law or environmental law or something. I mean, there's still a lot of different specialties within those broad practice areas. Right. So, you know, it actually takes a lot of effort to stay focused in one area, because what naturally happens is people go, oh, you're an environmental lawyer. Will you do such and such? Right. and so your practice naturally broadens. And so you really need to make an effort to focus it back.
And you have to learn how to say no, and you have to know when to make changes. And one of the things I wanted to talk with you about was changes that people are making with the coronavirus, with COVID-19. This the uncertainty that we have at this point in time as we're recording this. What do you think, or what are your recommendations for people in terms of making adjustments to their strategy with their niche, networking, cross-selling? What are your thoughts about that and the current crisis?
I mean, I think first of all, you need to look at trends. I mean, anytime you're making a strategic choice, and choosing a niche is always going to be a strategic choice, you need to look at the big picture, the social trends, the economic trends, and obviously all of that is moving, you know, extra quickly now. But if you look at what the big thinkers, you know, futurists and economists and different people who might be in a position to make educated guesses about what's happening, the consensus seems to be that the pandemic is basically just speeding up trends that already exist, right? So, you know, you've got online retailers are doing even better than before, right? Income inequality is getting even more extreme than before, right? I mean, restaurants were already struggling. So, I mean, on one hand, it feels like we're in a whole new world. But on the other hand, there's just, you know, if you kind of look at it as, in many cases, we're just kind of going more rapidly down a path that we were already on.
Right.
So the good thing about that is that whatever experience you already have, whatever knowledge you already have in your current practice, you can say, well, I was noticing XYZ trend. I already was thinking about maybe pursuing, you know, this or that. You already kind of have some foundation for making choices about going forward. So there's that. The other thing I think to remember, at least like in the legal industry, is when you're one of the biggest ways that people in big firms can get more business is cross-selling. You know, helping their partners get business from their existing clients, right? For those of you who are not familiar with this. And that can be tricky anyway, just because it requires a whole lot of trust. And there are, you know, interpersonal issues that can come into play and issues of expertise and whatnot. But with one of the things that's happening now is with a lot of people, with a lot of economic turmoil, a lot of people are probably going to be changing jobs,
right?
Which is going to make cross-selling a more fraught issue than it was before. I mean, if there's any sense of tensions or uncertainty in one's firm, it's just going to get worse, right? You know, anytime there's economic strain, you know, obviously tensions are going to rise.
It's going to magnify the stress cracks that are already there.
Absolutely. So the opportunities for cross-selling may end up being a lot, they may end up being worse prospects than before. Another thing to think about that what I have noticed is how much more receptive people are to, you know, to meeting new people. I mean, like LinkedIn, for example, has always been, well, not always been there, but I mean, it's been around for a long time. Right. It's a resource. People are on social media. I think last statistic I saw was 30% more, you know, during this crisis.
I believe
people
it.
Seem, I mean, just anecdotally, it seems that a lot more people are reaching out for help for getting jobs through that. I mean, I don't know how it is. I'd be interested in talking to you about how it is from a recruiting perspective. But like one thing that I've noticed being on LinkedIn more is how the headlines are so unhelpful You know how you like on LinkedIn, right? You have your name and then you have like the short description of your position. And if for a lot of attorneys, it says like attorney, which for someone like you, if you're looking to recruit somebody, you're not going to, like, that's not very helpful.
Right.
So I think just for being able to leverage those resources that do exist, like going in and actually thinking about it in terms of, okay, how can I make it more clear who I am and what I'm about and who I'm trying to connect with, you know, like just trying to get that out there in a more obvious way on platforms that already exist, like LinkedIn, that can be really helpful.
That's interesting. I think that we could look at this big crisis as an inflection point in our society. And I know some people that are in B2B sales or client development, whenever they look at targeting prospects, they'll look at an inflection point. For example, somebody that sells life insurance, they're going to look at people that just got married or maybe people that just had a kid. There's a major event in their life. That's the inflection point at which predicates the sale. You know, it dictates who's going to be open. I think that this crisis itself could be viewed that way, that it's an inflection point that's causing organizations to feel stress and there's opportunities. And I don't want to say we should be opportunistic in a predatory perspective, but in a service perspective, that we can serve people with our services, professional services right now. And so let me ask you this. If we could look at kind of summarizing some of the things that you're talking about, looking at three action steps, what would you say would be three action steps somebody could take to really kind of focus on the niche that they really know they need to be focusing on, and especially with respect to the current crisis?
I think first thing people should do is just start thinking about like future scenarios. You know, best practices when it comes to strategic planning is to be looking at kind of a worst case scenario, best case scenario, and an in-between scenario. Mm-hmm. And just based on, you know, because everyone's situation is different, just there's a lot of uncertainty. And I think very often people go straight to, oh my gosh, I just don't even know, right? Your brain doesn't even want to go there. But actually taking the time to sit down and think, okay, what are my predictions? And what, you know, you just starting to think about it helps you on a path that can lead to valuable insights.
That's great. And so that's step one. And what about other steps like related to LinkedIn or things like that? What are some other things that people can do?
I mean, sort of like what I just mentioned, go in and change your header to very specifically what you do. It takes a very short amount of time, but that alone, even if there's nothing else you do, I mean, if you don't have a picture, definitely put in a picture, right? But like those two things alone, it doesn't take long and it's valuable.
That's okay. Because I know you'd emailed me before, number one, update your LinkedIn picture or profile. Number two, proactively seek out ways to collaborate and cross-sell.
Yeah. So when it comes to lawyers, I think, and I mean, I guess this is really true for any kind of professional. This is a time to be generous. You know, there are people who are really scared. And so if you can be the person to really go out of your way to try and help people, it's definitely going to come back to you.
Right.
And it really creates that trust that's so necessary for any kind of productive business relationship.
I agree. I think especially early on when the crisis hit, people that were giving away free content without any expectation of buying it, those are the people that are building that trust. I think that's a leadership opportunity that some people really saw. Others, I think the way they approached that, it might not have been the best way, where, you know, it does have a predatory kind of tinge to it. But you're absolutely right. When I saw a lot of the law firms, here's the COVID resources, here's the free webinars, things like that, and just giving away content, I think that's a good way to build that kind of relationship with prospects. What do you think about that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I collaborated with somebody on a program for all of May where we did a whole bunch of webinars, and we invited people to, instead of paying us, donate money to food banks.
That's great.
And it was great because it's not, first of all, it's satisfying. Right? Like the world is strange and upsetting. And to the degree that we can do something constructive, we all feel good about it. And whether it's something sort of generally for society or whether it's just helping somebody by passing on their resume, I think we all feel good when we are helping other people. And then it's just amazing how much that stuff comes back to you. So there's no question that is valuable.
So Anna, tell us then, what are the offerings that you give to people? I know that you focus with law firms and attorneys mostly, but tell us about the services that you do. I know I've seen you speak at conferences before. What are some of the things that you have within your wheelhouse?
Well, the majority of what I do is one-on-one coaching, and I have a variety of packages that are appropriate for, you know, different people's, different kinds of situations. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what might be most relevant for people who are listening to this topic is I offer a 6-session strategic planning series where essentially we usually start with helping clients figure out their niche or fine-tuning it. And then what we look at is, you know, how we can then define a strategy to support that niche and then create a business development plan.
That's
so
great.
I mean, you know, depending on the person, you know, we might spend only one session on defining a niche and then, you know, then the rest of it on strategy. I mean, it really just depends on the person. It's completely tailored to the person's needs, but that's sort of the basic structure of how it works. And then recently, just because so many of us are really anticipating a lot of upheaval in the job market, even beyond what's happening so far, is that I created a low-cost 8-session career coaching series specifically for lawyers, but you know, it could be relevant for other people as well. And the focus there is really going through the things that I usually talk about with people in the one-on-one coaching sessions, but this is a group series, which also has the added benefit that it's a networking opportunity.
I see. That's great. Well, that's great. Well, Anna, we're going to put all of your content and links on our show notes here. So if people want to reach you, they can go to the show notes and reach out to you that way. Thanks so much for being a guest on the show today. I'm sure we'll have you back. Take care, stay safe, and thanks again for giving some of your great content to everyone today.
Thanks for having me. It was fun to talk to you again.
Great.
Thank you for listening to the Rainmaking Podcast. For more information about our recruiting services for international law firms, visit our website at attorneysearchgroup.com. To inquire about having Scott speak at your next convention, conference, sales meeting, or executive retreat, visit therainmakingpodcast.com.